Thanks, everyone. Good afternoon. So I think we can make a nice segue from Dr. Bull's presentation on talking about coercion, because she mentioned that gender and power differentials between men and women is a key determinant to addressing sexual coercion and some of the negative outcomes around that. And I'm going to talk a little bit more specifically about those gender dynamics and specifically how they relate to HIV. And the way I'm going to do that is to talk about an initiative that was actually funded by PEPFAR, the U.S. government's President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, in which they asked three organizations to take the lead on helping work in three countries look at how to better integrate these issues of male norms and masculinity as a key determinant to HIV prevention and HIV care and response. And so this was the work of Engender Health and the Acquire Project, Instituto Permundo, which is based in Brazil, and PATH was the key evaluation partner. And if I included every organization that was a part of this, it would just be a crazy mix of logos, logo soup. So I'll just stick to the three. Just a quick acknowledgement that PEPFAR, for the past about 3 years, has been doing some real work on trying to address these social constructions and roles related to being male and female and how it relates to HIV, and that they had these three sort of five complementary strategies around looking at how gender is a key issue related to the HIV epidemic. And I'm going to actually be focusing a little bit on that final issue in their strategy, which is to address male gender norms and behaviors. And just a little recognition of this fact. There's many studies, I'm just citing one here, of the recognition that common, traditional, harmful male gender norms can actually encourage HIV risk and drive partner violence and drives the interrelated epidemic between HIV and gender-based violence. And that at the same time that people recognize that, there's this growing evidence of effective intervention strategies that specifically look at constructions of masculinity as a key determinant to HIV prevention. Oftentimes they're called gender transformative approaches to working with men around HIV, because they're trying to examine, question, and redefine roles of masculinity as it relates to HIV. So with the Male Norms Initiative, PEPFAR focused on three countries, Ethiopia, Namibia, and Tanzania, and they really asked these three lead organizations to take a look at three different objectives: to provide technical assistance to PEPFAR implementing partners, both international NGOs and local NGOs who are receiving PEPFAR money, on how to integrate these issues of work with men and masculinity into their existing work. So that might be a program that's working with youth, or a program that's working with the military, or a program that's working with truck drivers. And to take a look at not just treating men as a target group, but looking and examining these underlying norms around masculinity and trying to achieve some change related to that. There was also an advocacy piece around sort of bringing a consolidated national approach to this work, and then they also wanted to carry out at least one outcome evaluation study. And I'm really going to focus on objectives one and three in the interest of time. So let me talk a little bit about the technical assistance that Engender Health and Promundo carried out. As you can see, this is a group education manual that basically combined the activities of two evidence-based interventions that were carried out that have been developed by Promundo and Engender Health, the Program H intervention, which first started out in Brazil and has since been adapted in India and other settings, and Engender Health's Men as Partners program, which has had positive evaluation findings from South Africa. And as you can see here, these are just two of the groups that have integrated this work. This is a local NGO in Ethiopia on the left, HIWAT, doing work with the youth clubs, providing this opportunity for young men to talk about what are the messages that they've received about manhood and how that places them at particular risk, and examining what are the costs and the benefits to alternative ideas about what it means to be a man. Very participatory activities, letting them have an analysis of what that means. Another group here in Namibia of prison wardens, a very tough group of men who nonetheless found real value in having these discussions around messages about masculinity and manhood. Now, as you might imagine, also Dr. Bull mentioned the structural issues around this, that, you know, we're talking about deconstructing thousands and thousands of years of patriarchy, in particular contexts and cultural specific settings. So running little workshops of men exploring these issues is important, but what does that mean to the man who then steps out into the society where those messages exist? So really trying to create community dialogues around these norms and mobilize men who have participated in workshops to do other work is a key strategy of this work. So again, you can see a resource that we provided, and these are all online at Engender Health's website, but this one takes a look at how can you sort of work with organizations to build their capacity around engaging men at a community level. So, you know, how can you do community events, marches, the use of arts, the use of educational campaigns to promote these positive notions about what it means to be male? And finally, doing some work around the clinical aspects about how we work with male clients. So again, a resource here that we use with existing implementing partners who are working in clinics and thinking about how they can make their services better adapted to men's needs. That picture on the left tells a lot. That's an analysis of one man who was involved in this work, telling the story of sort of men's social constructions about masculinity and their health-seeking behavior. What we know in many countries around the world, including the United States, men are less likely to seek health care than women. Huge implications for accessing HIV testing, and huge implications for accessing antiretroviral care. We know that men are less likely than women to seek it, and we know that when they do come, they're often much more sick than women when they first come in for treatment. So recognizing that there are social constructions of gender that are driving that on the demand side, but that there are also issues on the supply side of how providers provide that service. So looking at ways to provide and work with providers around ways that they can make their services more friendly for men, making their services more friendly for couples, way to involve men in prevention of mother-to-child transmission services, and so on. So let me talk a little bit about one study that we did through this initiative, an outcome evaluation study that was carried out by Julie Pulerwitz and her colleagues at PATH. It was a quasi-experimental intervention study working with young men 15 to 24, and basically had three arms. One arm was using those first two strategies that I mentioned, the community-based mobilization activities and the group educational workshop. The second arm only focused on these community educational events. Past studies had shown that there is an increased effect of the group educational events with the community mobilization, but we had never looked and seen, can these community mobilization events by themselves, which are much less complicated to carry out, can they have some effect? And then a comparison group with a delayed intervention. Okay, so there was also a few other things done, some qualitative research around participants in the intervention and their female partners. And really the main outcome measures we were looking at here were support for equitable and inequitable gender norms, which was measured by a validated psychometric scale that Julie Pulerwitz and Gary Barker created called the GEM scale, which can really quantify attitudinal shifts around gender egalitarian attitudes by men. And then looking at reported partner violence and reported HIV risk behaviors. So at baseline, what we found is that moderate risk at baseline, only 40% of the participants were sexually experienced in Ethiopia, and that 76%, over three quarters, were using condoms at last sex. So that had some implications in our ability to move the needle on condom use. But also a substantial proportion, over a quarter of the young men reporting use of violence against a partner in the last 3 months. So what do we find at Endline? We found that in both intervention arms, young men were significantly less likely to support inequitable gender norms using that GEM scale. And that when we controlled for the key variables, only the combined intervention that used the group educational workshops and the community educational events did show significant change in those attitudinal shifts. We also had some compelling findings around men's reporting of use of physical violence against a partner over the past 6 months. In both intervention arms, we found a reduction of over 50% of men's use of reported violence. And very interestingly, in the comparison group, a very different baseline and a slight increase after end line around that. And our researchers are still trying to analyze what's going on there. But nonetheless, the intervention arm showing significant change. A little bit of qualitative data from young men who participated in the intervention. After I took this training, I made a lot of changes, that I should use a condom, I should be faithful to my friend, that I should get tested for HIV. Another saying, women are not solely responsible for the work on household chores, but also men. I should do one thing while my spouse does another thing, sort of espousing those concepts of gender equality. And some validating data from the female partners. This one woman saying, my husband told me about unwanted pregnancy, abstinence, and HIV. He told me that we have to take care of ourselves from these problems, and we have to care for each other. In relation with the program, I can say he now cares about his house, and I can say this program makes everything good. So just a few final conclusions about the intervention and the initiative. Certainly, you know, based on the outcome evaluation carried out by PATH, it certainly shows, you know, the activities associated were associated with positive change in the key outcomes, and sort of adds the evidence base and the PEPFAR recommendation about this need to explicitly address these gender issues in HIV programming. With that, I come with the great reservation that, you know, when we're talking about deconstructing norms around patriarchy, we're talking about questioning social norms that have incredible implications around cultural relevance and site-specific relevance, and really trying to mobilize communities in that change, this takes time. And you know, that doesn't always work well with a PEPFAR system that's trying to implement an emergency response from year to year with limited funds to only study something for 2 years. So, you know, we're talking about social change here, and it's hard to fit that into a neat little 6-month study. But with that said, we did have, you know, very good feedback and very good examples of how PEPFAR implementing partners were able to adapt and integrate this, how the Johns Hopkins military program in Ethiopia was, in addition to already having a radio program, address these issues of masculinity into their work. And then I think another final point is that we found that even though this program only went from 2007 to 2009, in each of the three countries that have been carrying this work out, they have identified other funding mechanisms through the missions there to continue and carry out this work. So it speaks to some sustainability of that. So I'll conclude with those references if you care to look them up, or just email me. Thank you.